We're still in work session. I would entertain a motion on the dash five amendments.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Crummel.
I'll move the dash five amendments to House Bill 2082.
Representative Crummel has moved the dash five amendments to House Bill 2082. Is there any discussion? Objections? Hearing none, so ordered. We need a motion to rescind the referral.
Oh, okay. Mr. Chair, I would move to rescind the referral to Ways and Means, is it?
Yes.
Ways and Means.
Representative Barnhart has moved to rescind the referral to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I would move that the bill be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barnhart has moved House Bill 2082 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? We're going to go real slow so Representative Walker has the time to get back. That should be here by now. Rich, would you just peek out and see if she's there?
Well, Mr. Chair, as long as we're waiting, oh, here she is. I was just going to say that these dash five amendments are a very significant improvement. They make it very clear that the school board is in charge of whether or not this actually happens at all. They set up advisory committees, which are crucial to this kind of enterprise, and they give the learning center the responsibility of determining what the actual needs are in the community and making sure that's what they deal with and not something else. I think it's a great, it's a very much improved bill.
If there's any other discussion, hearing none, clerk, call the roll.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I had my...
Oh, you had your hand up.
But you couldn't see it for our administrator's head.
I couldn't see it because I didn't want to look your way. Representative Crummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the recognition. I appreciate that. I'm going to support moving this to the floor. And I probably am going to support it on the floor. I just want to caution us about one thing, and that is with regards to the school districts becoming more involved with social services. While I appreciate the idea of putting community centers together with the schools, and I very much appreciate the collaboration and the idea of utilizing the school facilities. I think that's extremely important. But I think that we have to be very careful that all of a sudden the teachers aren't expected to be the social worker, that the secretary in the office isn't expected to be the medication dispenser for. Yeah, I know that's already too late, and that it doesn't become a matter of the schools becoming so involved in the social services that they forget what their primary mission is, which is education. I also recognize, though, that hungry kids and sick kids don't learn very well. And from that standpoint, I think it's important that we get the assistance there. But there are some things that the school, I don't care how hard we try as a government, and I don't care how hard we try in our school system, that we are not going to be able to overcome. And that is when you have a crappy situation at home. If the parents aren't supportive, if the parents aren't feeding the kids, if all of these other sorts of things are occurring, it becomes more and more difficult for the schools to do their job. And I was reading the other day the article about the schools and what's going on there. And I think the one thing that we have to be cognizant of is that of all the things that the schools can control. You know, what's taught in the classroom and how it's presented and what the environment is there. But the one thing that it probably has more impact on the kids than anything else that the schools cannot control, and that's the parental situation at home. And I think we just need to be mindful of that as we vote yes to move this bill to the floor. Thank you.
Representative, let me just point out that if you were paying attention to the testimony from the Sun Schools and the other community school settings that we have in the state, that the schools do not control it. This is a community program. The reason we have put schools in the position in the bill that we have is because we are using their facilities. They have to be there at the beginning. They have to be cooperative or it doesn't happen. But these are not school-run programs. They are community-run programs set in schools. And so it was important to have the Department of Ed on board. One of the key components in this is to have the local school board in favor of the program so that we can use those buildings. But you're right, we're mindful of that, but that is not what is happening right now with the programs that are out there. They are community programs.
Could I even emphasize that a little bit more? I think that one of the things that the schools bring to this discussion is that they know better than anybody else what the effect on individual and groups of students are of the lacks in these social areas. But schools are not equipped, you're absolutely correct, Representative, to provide, to make up for those lacks in what's available in the other parts of the support for children. As I understand this bill, the point of it is that we do bring together all of the other community resources to support children in those other things that they need, and of course, when those are provided, children have an easier time learning, can actually perform in school. I think the piece that the school brings to it, in addition to facilities, is that they're one of the community agencies that can help this organization understand the places that in which children need extra help. So in that sense, they're one of the advisors of the program.
I very much agree with that, and I guess please don't misunderstand what I was saying, Mr. Chair. I came into this building talking about collaboration in 1999, and this is a type of bill that's asking me to put my action where my mouth is, and I'm willing to do that. I don't have a problem with that. I just want us to be mindful of these other aspects so that we don't start overloading the schools in that respect. But I like the SUN programs. I like the programs that the people came and testified. I like those programs, and that's why I want to support the bill.
Wasn't your turn to talk.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I cut it in.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to go on record as being very supportive of this program and of this concept. But I also want to go on record as being somewhat concerned about the fiscal impact. And I would have been much more comfortable if we could have added those few little words, as resources become available. I, in spite of my misgivings, I'm going to vote yes on this bill.
And Representative Cromwell, I was just having a little fun with you.
That's just fine, Mr. Okay. Chair. You can have all the fun you want.
We're going to have
You're the chair.
Yep. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Walker?
Yes.
Representative Tomei?
Yes.
Representative Crummel?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Chair Cruz?
Aye. House Bill 2082, having received the required majority, is declared passed. The chair will carry. And I'll close the work session on 2082. And committee, we are not going to hear House Bill 3114 after we had scheduled it. We discovered that there was a virtually identical bill in the Senate that had already been sent to Ways and Means. And so it appeared kind of silly to have the same thing there twice. So we are dropping 3114. So I will open a public hearing on 3053. Sam.
Chair Cruz and members of the committee. House Bill 3053 lowers the age of eligibility for participation in Oregon Community Safety Corps from 16 years to 13 years. It allows members of the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps Advisory Committee to receive reimbursement of expenses that they've
Well, we have quite an extensive sign-up sheet, so I'll call everybody up at once. Ron Adams. Former representative, colleague of mine in 97, and a good friend. Welcome, Ron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I have a guinea consensus. This is a good thing.
For the record, I'm Ron Adams, director of the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps. And before I describe the legislation, I'd like to take just a couple of minutes, and I know we're sort of confined with time, to tell you what the program is. Does everyone have one of these without all my chicken marks on it?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to refer to it. If you look at the front page, my advisory committee, 9 members, 3 appointed by the governor, 3 by the Speaker of the House, and 3 by the President of the Senate. We have deliberately spread geographically across the state, and also gone about 50% with nine people. This is tough. About 50% with education backgrounds and 50% natural resources. So it's great advisory committee. It works for us, and it's pretty carefully selected. And when folks want to re-up, we evaluate how they've done for us. If you look inside, the first two pages describe the summer program, and the statistics are from the last summer, summer of 2000. Our match in this particular program is about 2.7 to 1. So we go out and raise a lot of money locally, and you've had some of that discussion earlier today. The inside the back cover, we talk about the Community Service Corps, which is working with alternative schools across the state. We currently work with 13 alternative schools. We have 22 proposals for next school year. What we do within that program, spend about 50% of our time in education in the classroom and then 50% out working in the field, doing either community service projects or actually working on building trails or whatever. That is matched about 7 to 1 at the local level. It has been really positive. The reasons that we're as successful as we are, and again, you heard this a little earlier, the program flat works. It helps kids. We work really hard at getting partners with the state agencies. We give local control in that they select the projects, they select the way the programs work. We train the crew leaders so they really do understand the way that's most effective as far as learning. We require one-to-one match, and again, that gets back to buy-in of the program. And we're truly a hands-on outfit, and I think most of you who know me would understand that. To the bill itself, very quickly, there are three changes, basically. Page 1, line 23, lowers the age of youth that we may serve from 16 to 13. Page 1, line 25, and page 2, line 6, removes the reference to high schools because we want to go down into middle schools. That's what this is about. Page 2, lines 2 through 4, changes the old JTPA federal language to WIA, so that's the Workforce Investment Act, and it's a simple update. Page 2, lines 23 through 27, this gives OYCC the specific ability to reimburse advisory committee members for actual expenses. And I don't want to read all of this. As you glance at the second paragraph there, and I think Diane shared some of this information, the dropout rate currently for 13 to 15-year-olds in the most recent information is about 15.9%, and that's a year old. It's Department of Education statistics. The interesting thing about that 13 to 15-year-old dropout is that it's going up. The age when kids drop out is going down. That's almost equivalent to the dropout rate for 16-year-olds, which really surprised me when I discovered this. By lowering the age, we can work with a couple of key partners, Workforce Investment Act and Juvenile Justice, and that's very important to the communities that we work in. The alternative school model, as I said earlier, it works. The earlier we can identify and attempt intervention, the better off we are. The thing, just an observation over time and having served here, is that we do a pretty good job of incarceration in this state. We work at intervention. We do some prevention, and I think what OYCC does really, really, really well is preparation, because the others don't really talk about that. We believe that we can be as effective with the 13 through 15 as we are with the older kids, and that's the reason that my alternative programs asked me to bring this legislation, and it's the reason I brought it. And I'd be happy to take any of your questions.
Questions? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I know that the median age in this program, both the summer program and the other program, is 16. That's also the youngest age you're allowed to have under the current law. Is that illustrative of something useful?
I think it's an excellent observation. In the summer, it's probably more illustrative of the fact that that there are a lot of jobs out there. So the younger kids are the ones that can't get the service area jobs. During the school year, I think it points out an excellent point, and that is that we need to get kids early or we can't turn around either. I mean, it is so crucial that there be an alternative when that counselor discovers that a kid is falling behind in his classes or whatever. Now, there's a really fascinating statistic Department of Ed may be sharing, and that is that something like 6% of the dropouts are within 2 credits of graduation, 2 credits of their diploma. These kinds of programs, the kind that I work with in the other alternative schools, God, that is such a piece of cake to help them through that last hoop. But they've fallen behind, and they simply can't figure out a way on their own to make it up. I think it is terribly illustrative, though, regarding the 16. I apologize for a long answer. I used to be a rep, so I get long.
Follow-up, if I may, Mr. Chief.
Yes.
Will you have any trouble working with the alternative schools that are either connected with you or sponsored by you? I'm not sure how it's hooked up with this change in the age that you're allowed to work with. Will that be any difficulty for them?
No. Again, as I said, the match on the school side is 7-1. So it's the community that wants it, or we wouldn't be successful today.
Right. Okay.
So it is, but it is the local decision, and we will keep it that way.
Other questions?
Mr. Chair, if I may just make a comment. When I first started my career in education, one of the things that I found was that, and what Mr. Adams is talking about is absolutely correct, or it was then anyway, and I'm pretty sure that it still is the number of kids that do decide to drop out with a very minimal number of credits necessary to get the diploma. And it's really disheartening to see. A few of those I was personally able to turn around a few by suggesting that they go to summer school and that sort of thing, but it's not an easy thing to convince them that they ought to stay in school for one more term or one more couple of months so that they can, especially if they get 18 and the hormones are raging and everything else is raging and they really want to get out. So programs like this that can help them get to that diploma, I think, are very worthwhile.
Ron, I've known of course, Patricia Greensforth's been a good friend of mine for a long time, so I've been indoctrinated with this for a long time. And interestingly enough, I know most people on your advisory board. But this is a wonderful, wonderful program. And I think this is moving in the right direction.
I do too.
Any other questions?
I'd love to stay up here and tell you how wonderful it is, but I don't think you need that today.
But you'd rather have the bill, right?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing on 3053, and I'm going to open the work session.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cromwell.
This does not have a substitute.
This goes to the floor.
I would move House Bill 3053 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Cromwell moves House Bill 3053 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, clerk, call the roll.
Representative Walker.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Cromwell.
Aye.
Representative
Berard?
Aye.
Representative
Barnhart?
Aye.
Chair
Cruz? Aye. House Bill 3053, having received the required majority, is declared passed, and because Representative Morgan is the chief sponsor and also a member of the advisory board, we will ask her to carry. And with that, I will close the work session on 3053. Thank you, Ron. And last but not least, I will open a public hearing on 2571. Diane.
Chair Cruz and members of the committee, House Bill 2571 includes BDs in definition of tobacco products within the statute. BDs are hand-rolled, unfiltered cigarettes produced in India. They are made of tobacco and include various food flavorings like vanilla and chocolate.
Well, I like vanilla.
They have become especially attractive to young persons, and there are some concerns that parents, retailers, and young persons involved using these products that they don't understand the danger of using these products, that they see them as somehow an herbal alternative to a regular cigarette. However, they are reported to be quite toxic. I gave you a copy of the statute with the SMS, clipped to your SMS, relating to tobacco sales. So this is in terms of tobacco sales to minors.
Lieutenant Backlund. Welcome.
Thank you.
Ooh. You got some.
Right.
We've been talking about them all session. I've never seen one.
Chair Cruz and members of the committee, I'm, for the record, representing Vic Backlund from District 33, which is North Salem and Kaiser. And, Mr. Chair, I'd like permission to distribute an audiovisual aid here, actually the real thing. Would that be all right, Mr. Chair?
Sure.
All right.
There are no matches. The sprinkler system is active.
Do you know what this looks like?
I've got a lighter.
No, you don't have a lighter. And these are flavored.
Those happen to be cherry flavored.
Cherry. Wild cherry.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Well, Chairman Cruz and committee members, while you're passing out the subject that we're discussing, the so-called BDs, I would like to testify. During the interim, a high school student contacted me asking if there was something that we could do regarding a product called BDs. I must confess at that point, I was not very clear as to what a BD was. Having since, however, been in contact with people in the health division, I found out what a BD is, and I learned of its harmful effects. I then decided to be the chief sponsor of this bill. House Bill 2571 simply brings BDs into the definition of tobacco products, and therefore subject them to regulation of Oregon statute like any other tobacco product. Having spent a lifetime with kids in the classroom and on the athletic field, I feel very strongly that we must make every effort to protect the health of young people so that they can be successful in whatever endeavors they want to go into. BDs, in my estimation, are harmful yet attractive to young people. Incidentally, I'm told that very often we're talking age 13, 14 kids. This seems to be a very attractive alternative to that age group. They are candy flavored, as we've discussed, yet they contain as much or more tar or nicotine level as any other tobacco product. So this bill provides for a very simple change in the statute, yet I think a very important change to help improve the health and lives of young people. I enthusiastically urge the support of this committee to vote this bill out onto the floor. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative, is just adding the word BDs, is that enough? I mean, that's well enough to find.
Chair Cruz, I was in contact with the Health Division, or they with me, on a number of occasions, and we worked on the best possible language to deal with this issue. And it was determined that the best thing to do in this case was by far the most simple, and all we've done is add the word BDs, because now it's included in the definition of tobacco products.
Okay. Another question, Representative. Which end do you light?
Chair Cruz, I've not made a careful study of which end to light, but I believe it's the end that has the little circular...
Or the little stringy thing?
I think so.
I think you'd want to keep it together for... You would light the other end first so that the string would keep it together.
Well, I don't know.
Close the both ends.
We have a disagreement. Probably we should appoint a committee to investigate.
Okay, we'll do.
Chair Cruz, I must apologize. Unlike some members of this committee that I know, I don't smoke.
Well, you know, we do what we can to support the Oregon Health.
I know.
Is this, Representative, is this a tobacco leaf here or...
That, Chair Cruz, I believe the outer covering.
It is.
Well, I didn't see the package.
It's wrapped 2571.
Ebony leaf.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. Indian ebony city.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know why? You know what it looks
like. I noticed that this product is made or was manufactured in Bombay.
Yep. But it's distributed from out of California.
Yes. Yes.
What isn't? How much did this cost you?
Just a moment, Chair Cruz.
Katie, do you?
$2.25, Chair Cruz.
Any grocery store?
Typically, they have tobacco products.
Tobacco products? Where kids shouldn't be anyway. Okay. Okay. Any other questions of the representative? Representative Bond.
I wonder, Representative Backlund, if you considered banning this kind of a product because it is the sort of attractive nuisance that would attract young people at the age in which they can most readily become addicted to tobacco and unlikely to be of interest to older people. This sort of product is obviously aimed at young kids. They're the only people who are going to buy them.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you thought about simply banning them.
Chair Cruz and Representative Barnhart, you raise an interesting point. Actually, we didn't really think too much about the banning aspect or consider banning because it might have been more difficult to legislate. We were looking for perhaps the best avenue or the best vehicle to deal with the subject, and it seemed to put these into the regular tobacco products definitions would be the best way to go. Your suggestion is a good alternative, but we chose this approach.
One more.
I'd say, Representative, that it's made out of legal products, so that would be... Anyway, go ahead.
Well, but it's designed to be attractive to children. That's the reason I would ban it, just as in dealing with other things. But the second next question is, and probably you answered this one already, are we collecting cigarette taxes or some other taxes on this product?
Chair Cruz and Representative Barnhart, I haven't gotten into those details, but if it becomes a definition of a tobacco product, yes,
okay.
There are tobacco taxes, as we know.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I'll save mine for... Thank you, Representative.
Thank you very much, Chair, and members, for hearing my testimony.
We'll get Ann and David up here and hit them both with some of these questions.
Ah, okay.
Well, yeah, because they'll probably carry the bill, so we'll need that for a visual aid on the floor.
Well, and if you tire of wild cherry, we have raspberry, too.
Really? I like raspberry.
Okay. I just can't imagine chocolate would taste very good. I'm a chocoholic. I can't imagine chocolate would taste very good.
We were talking about that, too. Chair Cruz, members of the committee, I'm Ann Blaker, and I'm the program manager for the tobacco program at the Oregon Health Division. And basically, we support 2571, which Representative Backlund has already told you, just simply clarifies existing statute. I do want to give you, actually, what I'm doing is reading out loud one of the paragraphs from the testimony because it lists some of the chemicals that are in this particular product. According to the Centers for Disease Control, BDs produce more tar than regular Indian cigarettes, and their mainstream smoke contains toxic agents in higher concentrations compared to American cigarettes, including hydrogen cyanide, carbon monoxide, ammonia, and carcinogenic hydrocarbons like benzopyrene. And as was mentioned, they deliver more nicotine than some cigarettes. So they're not the herbal product that some people believe them to be. They're not the alternative for kids who think they're going to perhaps taper off of a smoking habit using BDs. That's just not really the true picture at all. Passage of House Bill 2571 will not change policy, but it will clarify BDs are one of the forms of tobacco covered under Oregon statute. And so I think if it's all right with you, I can turn it over to David and then be happy to answer any questions.
Chair Cruz, members of the committee, my name is Dave Del Valle. I work as the manager of programs and advocacy with the American Lung Association of Oregon. Part of my role was to bring the BDs, number one. I'm glad that Representative Backlund passed them out instead of me passing them out. and no cameras as a long association giving people cigarettes. But, these are, as was mentioned, legal products. They do carry an Oregon tax stamp that would be on the cellophane that this one does not have. As far as technical questions that you had asked before, the lit end is one with knot with a string around it. The string holds it in a little cotton filter. It's a fairly rudimentary filter. These things are definitely attractive to youth. In fact, they do look a lot like marijuana cigarettes.
I can roll a better joint than that.
And so for those reasons, we do consider this as dangerous as any other tobacco product and consider it a fairly serious serious health issue. And for that reason, we support this bill.
A question, because it says on the package that it's a tobacco product. So I, you know, not that I mind doing this, I'm just clear why it isn't already covered, because it clearly says that it's made with tobacco leaves.
My understanding is actually that it is covered, but that this is an opportunity to clarify that because the statute names cigars and other tobacco products specifically, this is an opportunity to list it as well.
And I would add that the BDs kind of came under the radar a few years ago. There were a lot of internet sales that were involved with BDs. So there is a lot of confusion, particularly among parents, whether this is something that's a tobacco product or not. So as far as regulatory agencies, I don't think that there's too much confusion, but in the general public there may be.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Thomas.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So how will this word get out to the public? What difference is it going to make? Because people aren't going to be reading the law. So what difference is this going to make to either parents or children?
I think at this point we don't specify any particular tobacco product in our promotion or in our advertising, but when we do, that would be added in. I know I just contradicted myself, but I'm thinking of times when we're talking about cigars or products that are of specific interest. I think Representative Barnhart's point, these look really exotic, and so they're attractive to 13, 14-year-olds, age of initiation. It's sort of raised to our radar screen the need to mention specifically in education programs and that kind of thing.
Follow-up, please?
Yes.
Couldn't you do that without this bill?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Representative, I would say that just by doing this bill, we're raising awareness.
To whom?
Something like this will make the paper, trust me. Representative Grodd.
I'm curious if every time a foreign country comes up with some new idea to smoke something, whether we're going to have to worry about adding it to the statutes to make sure that we're covered. Is there a better way to do this, in your opinion?
I think probably the way the statute is worded, I'd have to look at it with that in mind, but the way it's worded, I think it's inclusive, as long as it is a tobacco product, and Representative Cruz, Chair Cruz, brought up the fact that it says tobacco on the package. So I believe that's enough, actually.
Like Representative Tomei, I'm a little confused because, I mean, you know, it's that old thing, if it looks like a duck and walks like, you know, this is a cigarette, this is a tobacco product, and I don't understand why we have to come back and enumerate each tobacco product in the statute itself. Is there not a better way to reword the statute so that these type of products would automatically be covered? We wouldn't have to keep coming back to this every time.
It's my understanding, actually, that we are covered. I think Representative Backlund, and I don't mean to put words in his mouth, but I think he had a particular, as he mentioned, a young person that came to him with this particular concern, and I think was trying to address that concern. These are used fairly prevalently when it comes to what I would call alternative tobacco. But beyond that, I think from our standpoint, labeling them tobacco is probably sufficient.
Representative Barnhart.
I think this is a related question to the last couple. Does the department have any kind of rulemaking authority that would cover this sort of issue?
I'm unclear on that. I don't know.
Representative, the department can't in rule make something illegal. I guess, you know, as I read the list that this is being added to, this is, it kind of makes more sense to add it because this is a minutia list. And, for example, what is snuff flower?
I have to admit, that's a one that I didn't recognize.
Yeah,
either.
I mean, you know, I don't know what Cavendish is. I don't know what refuse scraps. That sounds really appealing. But, you know, I mean, it's a pretty minutia list. So.
I tried smoking catnip once when I was a kid, but they didn't include that. So.
Mr. Chair, as I read it toward the end of it, it basically says any kind of tobacco that's suitable for chewing or something.
But on the upside, committee members, this is a bill that adds one word to the statute, so it's a minimus impact. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Thank you very much. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2571 and open a work session on House Bill 2571.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cromwell.
I move House Bill 2571 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Cromwell has moved House Bill 2571 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Could we just discuss whether or not this is necessary? And I'm not opposed to the bill, but I guess I just have some questions since it seems to, in the law, it seems to include everything that is tobacco-related. And I'm just, I guess if we keep passing laws that have such a minimal impact, it's like it diminishes our job or role or responsibility. And if all we're doing is because this is going to be getting publicity in the newspaper, I'm not sure that's a good enough reason to pass a law, to change a law.
I have a follow-up question, too. One word, I wonder what it costs us to do this. What's it cost the taxpayers to add this one word?
$1,000 for each bill, right?
We've already spent it.
We've already spent it.
I would point out, though, that interestingly, the amount of time that we sat here and argued about whether to add the word or not, we could have had it then on our way to Miller time. So.
Mr. Chair?
I don't drink, so I don't care.
The thing that concerns me, and I don't have a problem voting for this bill and adding the word. By the way, for those of you that want to know, Cavendish is a type of pipe tobacco. The thing that I am concerned about is that on the package it very clearly states that it's a tobacco, that it is a tobacco product, and in the testimony that we got from Ann, one of the comments on the back is that she says although BDs are clearly included in the current definition, young people, parents, and retailers may be unaware that it contains tobacco. I wonder if young people, parents, and retailers ever thought about reading the package. I recognize that's a common sense approach, but anyway, I think that, you know, adding this one word, I don't think is a big deal. But if it clarifies things so that it makes it easier to enforce, then I would say let's go ahead and send it on. The other thing, there was a comment made earlier, I think about, you know, making it prohibited. I think we've already tried that with cannabis, and I think we're finding out that it doesn't really. Although we're continuing to run that experiment, I think we're finding out that it doesn't really work very well. So if you can't prohibit it, then let's regulate it and tax it.
They tried that with alcohol once too, didn't they?
I think they did. Yes, it's somewhere in the 30s or the 20s.
And now we have organized crime.
I'm equally off topic, but I can't resist it. Cannabis is far less addictive than nicotine. And nicotine is especially addictive for people whose brains and bodies are still developing. So age 13 to about age 20 are the ages during which people tend to become lifelong nicotine addicts. If we can prevent people from smoking before age 20, 18 maybe, We seriously reduce, we significantly reduce the health risks of tobacco because there will be fewer people smoking it. The same cannot be said for marijuana or the other illegal drugs that, we are talking about. Those have different sets of problems, but they're not the one we're talking about anyway.
I'd say the cannabis has probably stronger side effects than tobacco.
The immediate ones, that's correct, yes.
Any other discussion before we go way off topic? Hearing none, clerk call the roll.
Representative Walker?
Yes.
Representative Tomei?
Yes.
Representative Kummel?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Jeffries?
Aye. House Bill 2571, having received the required majority, is declared passed, and Representative Backlund will carry. And we'll close the work session on 2571 and adjourn.
Hey.